How to create the foundation of friendship. It's rude to look at your friendships and evaluate them based on how much you're benefiting from them. In essence, are your friendships and relationships purely transactional? Nobody likes to think this way, at least not out loud. We would love to imagine that we are friends with our friends because they suit us the best, we enjoy their company, and they know us inside and out. We all inhabit a special place in each other's hearts because of our unique sensibilities and emotional bonds, right? It sounds nice to say, and it's the politically correct version of how to describe friendships, new and old, but in reality, people subconsciously evaluate their relationships based on how much value they receive. It's important to mention that value is subjective and doesn't necessarily have to be in the form of any material or financial gain. Of course, we do value people who are valuable connections based on their wealth or status, but we also value people if they make us laugh, make us feel good, or act as our emotional crutches. We must be getting something out of it if we want to preserve or grow it. Most value and exchange in a friendship or relationship is usually measured in emotional terms. If people make us feel positive emotions, they have value to us, and we want them around because of their emotional value proposition. If they make us feel negative emotions, then we might not want them around, no matter how much they would be able to help our careers. So it's fair to say relationships are inherently a bit transactional. We get what we want from people in some form or fashion, and our friends get what they want from us in a similar fashion. If you spend time with someone whose company you don't enjoy, but these events always occur on their private yacht, it might be acceptable because you're hanging out on a yacht. But remove the yacht, and what are you getting in this transaction? Here's the thing about transactions. They only feel good if they're relatively equal. We all put a certain amount of effort in, and we have expectations about the matching return. One-sided deals or relationships feel bad. Emotionally, we're happiest when the give and take or cost and benefit are roughly equal. You wouldn't sell someone your car for $2 because it would be spectacularly one-sided and you'd feel ripped off. But you also wouldn't buy someone else's car for $2 because you'd feel guilty and immoral. However, you would sell someone your car for a fair price or trade them for the motorcycle you've always wanted. If a transaction is one-sided, we feel used and taken advantage of, or predatory and vicious. If you always give someone a ride to work and they never return the favor or acknowledge your effort, you aren't going to feel good about the relationship anymore because the transaction is unbalanced. It seems cold to categorize relationships thusly, but this is just a prerequisite of being a good person, much less being likable or a good friend. People pay close attention to what they put in versus what they get out, and it contributes to an overall impression we have about others. A study showed that people both subconsciously and consciously keep track of the exchange of favors in their relationships, and those are the happiest relationships. You can use this knowledge to your advantage in becoming a more likable person, as well as one who never gets taken advantage of. Equity within relationships. Walster, Walster, and Burscheid proposed the theory of equal relationships in 1978. They investigated how relationships rife with inequity functioned and found that the best and happiest relationships have an internal score sheet as to who is sacrificing and serving more. In these relationships, both sides sought to keep it equal. More broadly, the study helped define what came to be known as equity theory, the tendency for humans to compare what they have or receive in relation to what others have or receive. As mentioned, people don't like to feel like predators or prey. Rather, they prefer to feel like respected equals, even though this contrasts with our natural inclination to attain as much as possible. This can range from monetary, I'll pay for tonight if you pay for tomorrow, to emotional trade-offs, I'll be your shoulder to cry on if you do the same for me at some point. They found people are often driven by a sense of equality, and if someone gets too much or too little, even according to the set rules of engagement, tension and distress are created in the person's mind. the greater the inequality in a relationship, the greater tension and distress. Therefore, one of the foundations of friendship is a feeling of equality. Without it, you will never even have the opportunity to bond. Suppose you're sitting at a table with one friend and there's a small pizza on the table. You both love pizza, so we both want as much as possible. Yet we also know that the pizza should be split in half to acknowledge the other person and show goodwill and consideration toward them. But it's our favorite type of pizza, and we want all of it and could easily eat it. You would feel guilty, and your friend would probably show restrained annoyance and anger. What about if you took an extra slice on purpose? You would probably feel like a heel, and your friend would be supremely unhappy. This is the case even if our friend were to tell us, "I love this pizza, but take as much as you want." We wouldn't want to upset the balance, and most people would still split the pizza in half. Anything else just feels greedy and inconsiderate. What does equity theory mean for us? Should we seek to pull out a scorecard and annotate every time a debt is incurred? Surprisingly, yes. If not physically, at least mentally or figuratively. Keeping score as to the equality of your relationship will make you more likable. When you externally acknowledge equity theory and make it known you're fighting your human tendency to take as much as possible, people will appreciate your willingness to think about their desires. If you can keep yourself accountable and actively seek to even the score, you become more likable. It doesn't necessarily have to be so direct as, "You bought me coffee last time, so I'll buy it today." Remember, the transactional nature of a relationship doesn't solely concern finances or material possessions. It is subjective. To keep the score even, you should also consider emotional support, listening, time, attention, focus, and any and all other aspects that you value. If someone listens to you for an hour, remember that in some nebulous way, you owe them a degree of emotional support at another time. Underlying everything is the fact that people hate feeling guilty when they take too much, and also hate feeling taken advantage of when they give too much. If there is inequality in any measure, both parties will feel one of those emotions. This point basically boils down to being considerate of others' needs, which is a lesson that many of us need to retake. Understand what they want, know what they want to avoid, giving too much and taking too much, and deliver that to them. Unfortunately, compassion and empathy aren't second nature to most of us. If you see any situations where you benefit more, call them out publicly and make sure to rectify them as soon as possible. This makes the other person know that you pay your debts as soon as possible and are trustworthy and that you actively care about them and don't want to cheat them. Of course, this also removes the burden of feeling taken advantage of from their head. For example, you can eliminate some resentment and injustice when you call out, "I can't believe that you gave me a ride to the airport and I haven't repaid you yet. Dinner's on me." Eliminating guilt on the other person's behalf is trickier because it's difficult to say something like, "Hey, I got you last time we had dinner. Wanna even that score?" You must tread carefully, because this can sound offensive and entitled. If you feel that you're suffering an injustice, it's a matter of giving people a chance to set things right. If they don't seize the opportunity, they are failing at creating the foundations of friendship and likability, and they might not be the type of person you want to remain friends with. People are looking for win-win relationships, and you are proactively creating them. They can't help but feel that you are somebody who will stand up for your rights and that you're not a pushover or someone easily taken advantage of. That's pretty likable, right? Equality and equity is one of the first foundations of friendship. The second foundation of friendship is similarity. Similarity breeds liking. To many, bonding with others is a process that occurs over time or as a function of the passage of time. But you can be in a dentist's chair and undergoing a root canal, thereby spending a good amount of alone time with your dentist, and this is far from bonding. To quicken the pace of your bonding, also perhaps known as friendship chemistry, which we'll cover later, and become more instantly likable, focus on similarity and familiarity. You've probably heard that a mix of the two breeds liking, and it's so true that this is something we instinctually do already. For instance, what are among the first questions we might ask upon meeting a stranger? Where are you from? Where do you live? Where do you work? Where did you go to school? We've all experienced the phenomenon where we ask someone where they went to school and then discover they went to school where three of your acquaintances went. The next question out of our mouths will inevitably be some version of, "Oh, my friends went there. Jane Smith, Bob Dinn, and John Sane. Do you know any of them?" The question may disregard the fact that it was a giant school and they weren't the same age, year, or major. Why do we do this? Yes, it is an easy source of small talk because we get to learn the broad strokes of someone's identity and background. But what do we do with that alone? Nothing. We do this because we are instinctually seeking out similarities and common ground. We want to find a connection and point of reference from which to evaluate other people as quickly as possible, so we know whom we're talking to. We make judgments on people very quickly, and if they're similar to us, our judgments will tend to be more positive. This has been The Science of Likeability, 60 evidence-based methods to radiate charisma, make a powerful impression, win friends, and trigger attraction. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2019 by Patrick King. Production copyright by Patrick King.